Mr. Buchanan, Reel 7. Now, during this time, Steele Brownlee makes a couple of comments about the Firefly not keeping up, and then about a bit of a row when he warned the commander of it, and then Trooper Cross stopped him from being shot in the back. That may be a bit of an exaggeration, but would that be Crony? I see it's Corporal Crony, or do you know who was commanding the Firefly at that time?
That's been Corporal Crony. He had the 17th Panther. We had a trouble with getting them up. If you make a panther tank, or a tiger tank, the only person that could go against it was the 17th Panther. And you can never get it in and they are the right time, you know, it's a fish that you can give Steele used to swear that fish that fucking tank, you know.
And that was Crony, as far as you know. Were you aware of this row between him and? I mean, they had this.
I didn't know. No, he wouldn't tell us. I wouldn't know.
Did he improve, Crony? Steele Brownlee seems.
Of course he did. Again, I didn't know much about him. I think that the boss wasn't going to understand him in the court. But he must have improved. We never used him very often. We did a little one in the Tigers or Panthers. There was somebody else on that. We were lucky not to spend it. But and he was no use. The 17th round was no use to go high exposure. So I was kind of, you know. But no, it's the high exposure. It's no use to. Anyway, I have it. But the 17th round was really going for high exposure. And that's what we use most. Very, very good. Thanks.
Now, your troop steadied down. Who was your final? I mean, Gordon went.
Mackenzie.
And what was he like?
Quiet, very quiet. He never made much friends, you know. He was fine enough in the tank, you know.
He was a co-driver.
He was a co-driver. He was keen, you know, that, and was quite helpful when he had done his job. But he never mixed with anybody. My man was an ex-gamekeeper, a poacher, sort of player, you know. As I said, he was always mooching around, looking at things and going into houses and just seeing if he can scrounge anything, you know. And every legend has that, you know. And he always got the foot or the egg or something, and come back with chicken or something like that, you know. And he couldn't fault the chap, you know.
There's quite a lot of scavenging going on, was there?
Well, hard tack biscuits is a dead loss, you know, and all of these food parties are like, no bread and all that, and then the rules, and so is biscuits.
This brewing up, did the co-driver actually brew up in the tank? Because they're not supposed to do that. So, how would he do that? Would that be the method you mentioned earlier? So this wasn't the business of the can and the petrol, because that did sound a bit dangerous for inside it.
Mind you, there's plenty of room in the co-driver's compartment. He had quite a lot of back room too, you know, and he could do it. Just come down and put it in the boiler, and as long as the tank wasn't moving, he just can't do it, you know. On that tank, we stopped. We always stopped for about half an hour or so. One time we stopped for about 3 hours, and you couldn't get out of the tank because you could move right away, you know. You had to sit in that fucking tank. And I was trying to do a chicken, you know.
Inside the tank?
No, I ran outside the tank, and ready to run out the tank with my chicken, and it was almost part cooked. And the guy that came to me just before that, and I had vessels and pallets, and I was unbelievable. And I had to hang it, but I put a lid on it. There was a real pot, you know, we had got stored out somehow, and I hang it in the back of the tank on a hook. And away we went, away this swimming hand, because when I got the ladder that night and opened up my chicken, it was black with dust, the top half, and the bottom half was just white, laying under the water, like under water.
He didn't eat it.
But these are sort of things you get. The tanks used to stop for periods of hours, sometimes half an hour, sometimes an hour, and no apparent reason. some of them with a lead tank, the lead tank was the head up and I had the tank down and it was the entrance to come up and the elephants on it too. And that's when we brewed up, made a brew up with it. And if a bread, you could have sandwiches, nothing like that. We got some bread later on, and we went near the end, like brown bread, like gem, black, and everything. Just cut the crust off and save the nice and salt.
How important was tea to you? I mean, people seem to talk about tea all the time. And it seems funny. I mean, was it an important part of life?
I think it was, it was. I couldn't do it either. But if you were smoking, it's a great, it could clear your mouth and you could smoke after it and enjoy your cigarette. I mean, there comes a time when you smoke, and your mouth gets really clogged up. A cup of tea washes that away. And that's where today, up to noon today, I'm going to have a cup of tea and get a cigarette after it. But I've stopped smoking by the way, just in case. Just 4 weeks ago, I stopped smoking. And 30 years. And then that tea cleared the
So the tea was in a way secondary to the smoking, but I mean you mentioned smoking before. I mean you've been in action a few times now. Were you smoking more, you know, than you had done before you were in action?
Well, we got a lot of cigarettes thrown at you. You know, I mean, we're getting cigarettes. The fruit hamper we got for the plant, cigarettes, and I don't think Norman didn't smoke. Norman didn't smoke the rest of the time. I don't think my brownies were at least like a cup of tea. You got cigarettes, and these Red Cross people gave you cigarettes, and even my grandma would pass by and pass through cigarettes. You know, it's, you got so many cigarettes. Whereas in England, you have to buy your cigarettes, you don't have nothing. And of course, you smoke. You smoke a lot, I smoke a lot. I think they're all brown.
And do you think it helps your nerves?
Yeah, it does. Gives you something to do. But the thing is, you've got something to do. If you're sitting in a tank, we were dive bombed once in that anomaly, and I was sitting in a tank and I was like that.
Shaking.
It really was, because I couldn't do nothing. I just had to sit there and take it. Sit and take it, because you couldn't. You couldn't, the airplanes are all. And my guns when you got that far, and I just had to sit there, and that's when but as long as you were doing something, you forgot anything else. I mean, as long as I was doing working, bombers, shells, as long as my gun was firing, as long as I was doing something, I was okay. But see, when I was sitting there, and I put it right on, and cigarette helps. It doesn't make you shoot it, but you just keep smoking, and you're doing something,
Now, after Goodwood, there was a period of rest at Ardenne Abbey or something. Do you remember much about that? It was just a period out of the line, I think, before you moved round and started on Operation Bluecoat.
No, I don't remember that. Was that still in Normandy? Was still in Normandy?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember Bluecoat.
Bluecoat's just really the advance, you know. That's right, and all that. If we move on to that, the first thing is that they went on to Martin Saint-Bessas and things like that. And now, you don't remember this incident that on the 30th of July, we just discussed off tape, where you sort of brewed various things up first time without orders, and then they were hit by a bazooka, a panzer. You don't remember that? Because he was quite shocked, I believe.
You had to be quick. I mean, the gun that was loaded with high explosive shell all times, and I've given carte blanche a free rein. I mean, if I saw something, fired it, and then I'd tell the commander that, because he couldn't watch everything, you see, he was taking up someone else. So when I saw these things, I just fired them. And Norman just reloaded this, and he was on the reload, because I used to fire him now, and he'd get another shell and shove it up. And all of us said, we're firing now, AP firing, and he would get an AP next shell, so I just had to clear the gun first. But I mean, I just fired him way back, and if I saw something that was me over there, and I just had to go, and I'd go for that. And it was only just, you never thought about it, you know. I mean, a neighbour left us only it's only a wee thing with certain barrels on it. I mean, it's insignificant, and you saw it used for a show. It wouldn't be any men or anything, they probably would care. So you destroy it because you don't want somebody else to come down and press the trigger and shave the thing.
Would you use your machine guns as well?
If it was infantry men, I'd use machine guns. You know, if I went into the wood, I would spray the wood with the machine gun. But normally I'd get a shell of it.
Would you fire into, I mean, some tank commanders fired into areas where they thought infantry might be because of this bazooka thing?
Well, yeah. We blasted,
Brassed?
Brassed the area. You either put a shell, a high, if it was firing into the trees, I put a D-ray on the shell, and you wouldn't have to bounce it there, you just put it into the trees, and the first tree you hit, it would set it off and then blow. Or I would spray the bottom of the ground with machine gun fire with another shell in the tube, delayed shell in the tube, at the bottom of woods and that, and that's where the infantry would be. Well, in one case, the infantry were coming back and were pointing at this woods, they couldn't speak to us because they could see where the guns were pointing, they were pointing at the woods, so I would turn the gun and spray the woods with machine gun fire.
Now, you don't remember this time when you were hit by a bazooka shell?
No, I don't remember that.
The next thing is... that was 30... It's not long after Goodwood. When they first started moving forward... There's a story of moving into... Into, I think it's St. Martin's House, where they saw a nude tailor's dummy. They seem to go on about that a bit. And the engine packed up. Remember that? The next big thing then is when they crossed the Via Vassi Road, and your troop was left the other side of the road for a while.
We had found this, I think this is a place where we had found a lane, in France it was something lanes, and we found this little lane. And Bernie, I said, let's go down here. And we went down this lane, and of course, naturally, a troop followed you, and we came out onto this Via Vassi Road. And we crossed, we had to get to the other side so that all the tanks can come out of the trunking lane onto the road, you see. And we took a position on the other side of the road.
Now, this was the Via Vassi Road, I think.
Yeah.
Now, he says he went along this road very carefully because it wasn't a time for baffing. Baffing, that's just going on fast, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he says he sort of crept along the road. That's, do you remember right. that?
Yeah. I remember that thing. The road, in the end, they were using this road thing to, and we had cut it. And this, first of all, I think there was an ambulance that came along, I stopped it, and there was an officer on it, and he was all for the need of conversion for him as well. And he escaped, and I think, but
how did he get away?
The whole thing in France was when the German planes came over, the British and Americans went for cover. When the British planes came over, the Germans went for cover. But when the Americans were over, every bugger went for cover. And I think it was either bombed by the Germans, the American planes. Because extended as we had, well, of course, where they hadn't been told that we'd been going to do it back to the courtesy, so it was all right, but he could be in there, he could be free. But now, coming along that road, and this is where a German scout car came along, just a wee jeep with three men in it. And Bernie says, oh, stop it, this is. And that's where I pressed the wrong button, and so they got a couple of bursts of machine gun fire, and got sent to the ground for sure. And Brownlee had his kept the Royal driver's cap, the side cap. I had it down in West Berlin, and I was desperate to get it, but then didn't think it would be.
It was an explosive shell.
That's Yeah, that was the one side of the road, and they crept along, I think it was the valley that went along the other side of the road, and the way at the bottom of the road went down, and at the bottom of the road was a lot of German tanks, tigers and all that, and panzers and all that, but we were going to take them in. And latterly they came up the hill after us, you know, they must have got one that we were up there, and we had to pull back.
You weren't too aware of staying overnight, your troop?
No, because we didn't need the infantry. Tanks were very lost at night, they were blind. We need the infantry, and that's why in all battles tanks were pulled out at night. If they're going to be working, and it comes to a certain time, when they got dark, you were pulled out, and an infantry unit came up and took the place. And then we went back in the morning.
But in this particular case, Steele Brownlee, and he got a medal for it actually, you had to stay there with some Canadian infantry. You don't remember that bit?
Well, I don't remember that bit.
That's fair enough. Anything else about the time? The next big operation is against Perrier Ridge, I think. Do you remember that at all?
No, I don't remember that.
One thing is around about the Veer thing. He took his amphetamines or benzodrine, whichever it was, to keep him going. Yeah. And I presume, would you not take yours as well that time?
We all take yours. I think that was that. No, that we finally got where we were moving up through France. That we keep our eyes open, you know, because we travelled all night.
And he also says that he had some Calvados, which gave him a bit of a problem. Was he noticeably not well?
No, wasn't the problem he had. The problem was true.
What happened?
Calvados too, you see.
What, the whole troop, or just the...
One of the chap, we...
Where did you get the cow? Tell us the story then, what happened?
The farmer, we had this area, the farmer, they were a drop of Calvados. We went through this farm and then pulled back a little. I kind of really remember the blast and garden, but this time I've now just bought the calories. And he gave it, and his wee glasses, you know, even tots. I said, boy, so that boy must be a bit of Scotch. Because all we were getting was just a wee tot of this calories. So we got it and went over in the run and honest. It must have been 200%. If it's possibly 200% proof, it must have been 200% proof. And we're right down the coast and scoping back away, you know. And we got some of these bottles of calories. The French people have always been getting bottles of wine, and we got some of these calories, and we had a knife in this tent. And one of the boys came with that, he must have been right behind the ice, and we had to sit in there. And
was he all right afterwards?
I haven't. It was a worry for us because we weren't supposed to be. We must have been out of action for a couple of days, and otherwise the officers are going to notice it. That's what it means when they say that they're going to be a because they knew in the sense that somebody else was going to be the colours. We drank a lot if we could get it, you know.
And what about the hangover?
Well, the hangover from Calvados is something again. I mean, the pure Calvados, I mean, you buy it in the shops here, and it's just you know, it comes out of it. You know, he made it himself, of course, the apples. It's apples. You know, it's hangover from apples, and then finally made it himself. In fact, you've talked about earlier on, you're talking about how the Calvados are. Ammunition, we store the ammunition. Well, we had the ring, but underneath we had this bin which held surplus shells. When we used them up, we filled it with bottles of wine and carbonates, which would be given to us by the French people, you see. After the Farley Gap area, we went through the Farley Gap because the two villages were then sealed by the way, and they handed bottles of this wine, which was the French wine drinking country. And we had a wine cellar under the bottom of the thing, because, you know, everybody had a wine cellar, but, and at my age, I was only a peasant as far as wines are concerned. If there'd been bottles of whiskey, that would have been all right, but it was only bottles of wine, and as it was just like lemonade, and we drank it like lemonade, you know, we didn't need. It was some that must have been good stuff, and some that maybe just need a look at the thing. But we had a wine cellar. In fact, I did thank the wine cellar.
Now, one thing he mentioned on the 6th of August, this is Perry Ridge, there's some fighting, and he gets against tanks, SPs, on a ridge. And one thing is the evacuation of some of the wounded in the tank. Now, you might not remember that particular case, but do you remember evacuating wounded on or inside the tank?
Yeah.
It
was another tank. We were lying all over the tank as it blew up. And we moved, the escape hatch that the co-driver has. We dropped that and we run the tank over them and we pulled them up through that and brought them back in the co-driver's seat back to where the escape hatch to get them the medical boys on them. And two or three of us at the back of the tank. We're under fire through the time. I wasn't very happy, but that's the coward in me, you see. But we got him back and we got the two from the back of the tank. We took him back to the medical centre. I don't know what kind of bathroom it was, but whether it was, but I remember him because.
What was his name?
I really don't know his name. And it came from, I think it came from the answers for him. He didn't come back to us and he was sent home because he was badly wounded, you know. And it wouldn't have helped him much because it's more nice for you drag him in. You don't get them in, you know, and put them back. And the blonde, when I was in the blonde, they had a nice chat. But I like my cool memories.
Now, one thing, you were increasingly meeting tigers by this time. Now, could you recognise the Mark IV, the Panther, the Tiger? And what did you think of each of them?
The Mark IV was a kind of comparable to the Sherman. I mean, if we met them all the time, we're okay. Yeah, we got a good gun. The gun was better, slightly better than us, but we could get a good counter-jet, and it was all Mark IVs.
Could you penetrate their armour?
Yeah, if you get close enough, you know, you get a wee bit closer, and then their gun could fire a better shell further away. But if you can get close enough, you could get penetrated. You know.
So that was a fair fight?
That was a fair fight.
The Panther?
The Panther had an 88 gun, which is, you just couldn't argue with it. If you get a Panther, you try and hit it on the side. The Germans always put their arm on the front. You can hit it on the side or the rear. But again, with the Panther, if you shove a few shells at it, two or three times aimed at it, you know, it'll disappear or blow up or rub and damage the tracks, you know. And that was fair enough.
So, hang on. So two or three tanks would be needed normally to take out a Panther. Would that be fair? Or a lucky shot?
A lucky shot, two tanks. Or get there. The 17 pounder which we had with the big gun, that could take a Panther out. That could penetrate.
Now, the Tiger, what could you do against the Tiger?
No, nothing really. You could use the artillery on a big 5 pounder with 600 guns on it.
So, there was no weak point? Or
the weak point on the Tiger with his tail. You could put nothing into it, but it's probably not. At the rear, you could get behind it and put a tail on it. I believe his track.
Six inches. As well as armour.
And the side was, well, they had all these pieces of armour, these cracked pieces which we had on the side. So the dangerous part of the time was
Would they move about, or would they tend to be in a position?
They moved about, but they would usually hold down in a position.
So if you saw one, I mean, obviously, if you saw one suddenly, I presume you'd fire at it, but basically, would you get out of the way?
Get out of the way. I think the ways and means of getting out, basically, to get there,
Had your wireless operator or Steele Brownlee, had they a connection with the RAF, or would it go through the regiment?
Of course, the head of the regiment, actually, the head of the regiment, and they always had a, if there was different typhoons in the area, they had a direct communication, and they'd see that, and they've got a target here. Well, they'd even go back to the general headquarters, and from the RAF, so and so to go. And we'd put a shell over its head. The shell had smoke, red smoke. You put a smoke shell on a red smoke, so that the aircraft coming along would look at that red smoke and say,
so your job was to mark the position?
Mark the position.
So there's nothing you Shermans could do?
No, if you all ganged up on it and then fired at it, I mean, as I say, if you're getting hit constantly, you know, it's not very pleasant something attack, so you get in moving, but there's not much you could do with a tiger.
Now, what about during these advances, how did you work with the infantry? I mean, how did Scott Brownlee, he was a troop commander, but how did, generally, did you work? I mean, did they travel on the back, or did they have their own vehicles, or how did it all work?
It's an armoured regiment, and the armoured regiment has their own infantry. They have their own infantry. They do have armoured cars.
Attached?
Attached. And when you get into trouble, if you can't get your own infantry up to surround the danger area, you ask the local infantrymen to do something. And at the back of the tank was a telephone, so they could lift and speak to the commander up and talk. You see, he would just press the button, he would go, "Ah, yeah," and they would see the so-and-so is over there, and something, machine guns over there, yeah. But usually, the cars were in, and
so they didn't travel on the back of the tank much?
No, they were only once had an entry in the back of the tank, and it was like a small local, I thought it was a local, the war for the 15th Scottish, I think, and they put some men in the front, and they got themselves, and ran around.
Was that in France or later?
No,
that was in France. What did you think of the infantry? I mean, you know what it's like, tanks and all that. Did you admire the job they were doing? Did you think they were doing a good job, or did you think they were...
I admired them. I thought they had the roughest, toughest time, because they were in the open, and they were in minefields, you know, you put your foot down, you're mixing and blowing it up, and I thought they were great. But they thought the same as we were thinking. They say, well, they're only going to be a tank. I imagine even one of them. If they came across these tanks that they made up and they put their feet in the queue, so they thought we had a tough job. They were all keen to see because we could pick up any of the engine and step in the middle. We had to respect them, so.
Some infantry don't like tanks being around because they reckon they attract fire.
Yeah, they said that. This Welsh regiment.
Was that the Monmouths?
Monmouths, yeah. They said that because you know. We said the thing about the artillery when the artillery pack next to us in the lager, they said, "My God, they're going to be firing at the hours of the night." I said, "Can we do something else?" Because it's them as we're trying to spot them and send out shells over, you know. So we were the same, they're all the same boat.
What about mines? Did you see them as a big problem? I mean, anti-tank mines.
You had to have a static war in order to get, as far as tanks are concerned, because we could cross fields. But if you've got a static thing, then the fields would be mined. But it's normally only the roads that were mined, and the tanks were more or less trying to stay off the roads where possible, because it would turn up the road. And of course, some of these soft vehicles, what we've termed soft vehicles, come behind us, have trouble keeping up with us, you know. So we just went to the fields, but the infantry, they kept in the road because the fields were too, you know, waterlogged or anything like that, you know. And the roads were mined, especially the sides of the roads.
You were never mined yourself then?
No, I never.
They wouldn't put a tank out of action, would they, normally? Yes, sorry, they wouldn't kill you, though.
Not really, no. The blast would be, yeah. The blast, no. Most of the mines that were laid were not anti-tank mines, as such. They were more anti-soldiers, you know. the one main rabbit was to spring up on the ground and keep it off the ground and then go, you know, and it blew your legs off. That was a deadly one. So that's why we thought that the infantry had a rough tough job, because you know, when they were hitting something.